From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll learn about the Green Tree Apartments and a photography project centered around the people who've been impacted by the Learning Center there. Then we'll meet the world champion taxidermist who preserved a beloved Milwaukee gorilla.
In order to do him, that required a lot of research on what made him unique to himself. Not just a gorilla, but I had to capture Samson's personality and Samson's expression.
Plus, we'll visit two senior dance groups to learn the benefits of movement and community.
That's the legacy that we want to leave, that when you become a senior, life is just beginning. We're living our best lives right now.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us today. This past fall, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel published a series on the Green Tree Teutonia Apartments, a public housing complex and learning center on Milwaukee's far north side. The series covers the people living and working there, the institution's success stories, and how it defies stereotypes of public housing. Reporter and photographer Angela Peterson spent 15 months at the site gathering interviews, taking photos, and getting to know the residents. She gave Lake Effect Sam Woods a tour of the site, where a feeling of safety was palpable.
What does it feel like to feel safe? Of course, there's being physically safe, where your body is not in danger of physical harm. But at Green Tree Teutonia Apartments, safety comes in many forms. And for Raphael Ford, feeling safe sounds something like this. In the neighborhood. Artist name Mayhem, or Mayhem 3, Ford is a musician, rapper, and a member of the Milwaukee Hittas, a competitive drumline group that you may have seen performing at Brewers games. He spent much of his teenage years at the Green Tree Teutonia Community Learning Center, catching up on schoolwork and honing his musical talents.
I learned how to do everything in there, pretty much like basic math. And I learned how to read in there because they had me read for extra time. I learned how to make music. But basically, I grew up in there. Basically.
The Learning Center and the residents of Green Tree Teutonia Apartments are the subject of a recent series from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Together, the two public housing complexes house around 700 residents in 328 units. Rent is calculated based on income, with the difference subsidized by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, and units are managed by the Housing Ministries of Wisconsin. Many residents stay for decades and often find work at the complex or by using employment services there. The series was led by photographer and journalist Angela Peterson, who collected stories at Green Tree for 15 months. Perhaps by coincidence, or perhaps by fate, her journey to photography was nurtured in the 1970s at a community center similar to Green Tree near her childhood home in Washington, D.C. And as fate would have it, her photography journey began with young love.
When I was in junior high school, I had a crush on this guy. I'll just say Dennis C. I won't say his last name.
Protect the innocent. Yeah.
And he was in the photography club. And it was actually this crush that led me to photography. And I don't always start with that story, but my girlfriends, they were like, well, join the club because Dennis is in it. I'm like, okay. So I joined the club.
Her crush didn't last, but a lifelong love for photography was born in this class. Soon, Peterson enrolled in a vocational high school focusing on photojournalism and connected with mentors at the Washington Post to kickstart her career. But even today, she remembers one of her instructors at the community center in Washington, D.C., who gave her a safe space to be herself and explore her art.
The person who led the class, and I don't know his full name, we just called him Bubba. Mm-hmm. Black man, kind of round and kind of, you know, almost Santa Claus-ish like, almost if you will. When he laughed, his stomach kind of jiggled and everything. But he had such a warm personality and he was so encouraging to me when I became interested in photography.
Walking into Green Tree decades later, Peterson remembered getting a similar feeling to the center that nurtured her passions as a teenager, a feeling that people cared and that she would be encouraged to be herself.
I know that Milwaukee in some communities is not very safe, but when I went through the door, I felt safe. And I think the kids there feel safe as well. They feel safe to be themselves. They feel safe to run around. They feel safe to be in a space where they can learn. They feel safe where they could be encouraged. And that's what I took away just within like 2 days of just being there. I mean, just that quick. And I was like, she's like this magnet to not only the kids, but the adults too as well.
The magnet Angela referred to is Vicki Davidson, program director at the Greentree Tetonia Learning Center. She's worked at Greentree for 26 years and even lived there for 12. Miss Vicki is a never-ending source of love and support. See, many folks come to Greentree at an especially low point in their lives, when stability and safety are top priorities for adults and children alike. The Learning Center offers computers, printers, and services for filling out job applications, writing and printing resumes, and otherwise supporting Greentree residents and the surrounding community in their effort to find a stable income. For children, the Learning Center offers summer enrichment programs, scholastic support, African dance classes, games, events, field trips, and more. The result is a center where children feel safe to ask for help and to create lifelong memories.
When children remember something with joy, they remember a field trip, they remember something Mr. Martinez said or did that they can still laugh about, or they remember something I said or did that they can laugh about. That's where the joy comes in, knowing that you created memories and that the memories mean so much that they still come back to let you know, life is good or that something may not be good. We've had some tragedies over the years, but those are the moments that we live for, I think.
But Miss Vicki will be the first to tell you that often love is rooted in accountability, in seeing the potential in someone and holding them accountable to reaching that potential. To instill this in the young people at the Learning Center, the Greentree staff developed a responsibility paragraph, and children of all ages are expected to recite it every morning during the summer program.
It is time for me to stop blaming others for the way I act and start taking responsibility for my own actions.
I am who I am because of the choices I make.
Responsibility is the key to my success. If it is to be, it is up to me.
Miss Vicki remembers being surprised when her son, now in his 30s, still has the responsibility paragraph memorized.
Years ago, he was in a program, a Saturday program, and he's in his 30s and he still knows it by heart. He says, Ma, he says, I can't believe it. He says, but I do know. I said, you still remember that? He says, yeah, you know, when you learn something as a child, he said, it just sticks with you. And I said, well, then the key to that, of course, is if you can impart and pour into children early and keep pouring into them, it's more likely to stick with them.
Moments like this are what Miss Vicki and the staff at Greentree lay the groundwork for. Miss Vicki will be the first to tell you that progress can be slow, and some folks slip through the cracks, unable to meet the expectations set by the Learning Center or apartment complexes. But overall, public housing communities like the Greentree and Tetonia Apartments and the Greentree Learning Center have found a way to get countless Milwaukeeans back on their feet, one job application at a time, one reading lesson at a time, and one calming exhale at a time. And after 26 years of service, Miss Vicki has seen dividends paid on that stability and safety in the forms of stable, successful, and safe alumni.
We've done a lot, and a lot of people have come through our doors. But you know what the most marauding thing is to have people come back, to have parents come back and tell you, my little kids, remember them? Oh, they're all grown up now, or they're in high school now, or they're in grade school now, and they're doing good. I'm doing good. I just bought a home. I just moved into a 3-bedroom townhouse. And you know what their struggle was when they were here. And then you see from whence they've come and where they are now. That's the most rewarding for me.
And as Angela Peterson can attest, tomorrow's success stories, tomorrow's Angela's, tomorrow's Vicki's, and tomorrow's Raphael's, are finding safety and stability at Greentree as we speak.
There was one student, first name was Angel, and she walked in the first day, and she was very quiet, and she had a book. And she used this book as a shield to not associate with the other children, in my opinion. She's very, very shy. By week 3, the book had come down. She was doing cartwheels outside with the kids during recess, And it creates like this opportunity for kids to forge friendships with each other. Now, don't get me wrong, there's drama that happens too. Some kids don't like each other. That happens everywhere. But I noticed how she started to come out of her shell. And it was wonderful. And the adults, I could hear them talking about that. Look at she didn't bring the book today. Where's the book? You know, she's interacting. She's talking. She's putting her arms around someone. You know, she's broken down that shield. She's put it aside so that others could come into her space too as well. And I think that's what happens at Green Tree. They create an environment where it's supportive for everyone to be in the same space. They create a space where they want everyone to succeed.
That piece was produced by Sam Woods and includes sound from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Angela Peterson, Green Tree Teutonia Community Learning Center Program Director Vicki Davidson, and artists Raphael Ford and Green Tree Youth. The complete series featuring stories, photos, and videos from Green Tree is available at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Many Milwaukeeans are familiar with Samson, the beloved gorilla who lived at the Milwaukee County Zoo until he died in 1981. Now, Samson lives at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Wildlife artist and world champion taxidermist Wendy Christensen made the popular recreation of Samson that's on display there. In the nearly 36 years she's worked at the museum, Christensen also created hundreds of animal mounts and sculptures for various exhibits. Lake Effects expert Nunez spoke with Christensen about her passion for wildlife art and how she recreated Samson.
I want to take it back to the beginning. When and how did you become interested in taxidermy?
Oh boy. I guess I've always was destined to become a taxidermist. And I know that sounds silly, but seriously, I had an interest in preserving animals from a very, very young age. I'm extremely passionate about wildlife. A lot of it started out when I was young and I would see animals hit by cars laying on the roadside. You know, I always thought, oh gosh, what a shame. It would be so cool if I could make that animal look lifelike again.
I guess around when? You said you were a child, boy. So when, how old were you?
When I was 2 or 3, my mom told me I picked up a minnow out of the bait bucket. And I walked around all day petting the minnow.
Oh.
Obviously, the minnow had seen better days, but I was just that much intrigued with animals and just wanting to have them a part of my life. When I was 7, my dad, he hit a coyote, and I just thought that was such a beautiful animal. There was some way that I could preserve that. I felt helpless because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do anything at 7. And when I was 12, I took Northwestern School of Taxidermy, which is kind of funny because all the old-timer taxidermists is how they started. It's a correspondence course by mail. It got me started, and I sat in my basement, and I started with my pigeon. They recommend you start with a pigeon. And when I was 14, I took a mini course from a local taxidermist so I could actually see things hands-on. And he was not a great taxidermist, but it did help me. You know, it helped me pique my interest. And when I was 15, I started working for a taxidermist that ended up being the person that probably helped me more than any. Because in that time period, late 70s, early 80s, you did not have access to all the knowledge that we have today. Taxidermy was a big secret. People didn't share their processes. Like today, it's all over. You can learn from internet, you can YouTube, you can get books, you can get video. Back then, there was only a couple of books.
Yeah, so and what I'm hearing is you kind of worked your way up to work at the Milwaukee Public Museum. How do you even approach working with such unique animals?
A lot of research. So if you wanted to mount a deer, say an example, there are all kinds of commercially available mannequins. The mannequin is what the skin gets glued and sewed and mounted over. And the mannequins are catalogs of books that you can pick different sizes, different poses. And as an artist myself, I make some of those. They're all hand sculpted,
Wow. Those
mannequins. But when you're doing something like an ocelot or a jaguar, those are not commercially available mannequins or monkeys, primates. So you have to learn how to make them 100% yourself.
So you have to learn the measurements of that animal.
Yes, you have to learn the anatomy and the structure and what makes that animal, the essence of that animal, as I like to say. And that's where the study part is involved. Even though, you know, musculature is similar on every animal, it's still slightly different.
Right. You really have an eye for detail, and you were talking about how you've sculpted horses, mm-hmm. gorillas. How long does it take to work on a project like that, a large project like that?
A large project. Okay. In the case of the gorilla, I'm assuming you're referring to Samson. In order to do him, that required a lot of research on what made him unique to himself, too. Not just a gorilla, but I had to capture Samson's personality and Samson's expression. So I did a lot of research on that. And so the research part takes, and the same with like the horses you referred to, those are King Tut's horses. They're ancient Arabians. I spent probably a couple of months doing research on what made ancient Arabians of that time different than our modern Arabians. Mm. To answer a very long story here, trying to make it a little shorter here, Samson took a year approximately, but it was because I was actually on display in the public making Samson. They wanted me to make him in front of the public. The museum did. So even though that is something I probably could have done in a little much quicker time fashion, the whole exhibit was up for a year. So they wanted me to work on him while I was down there. So I worked a couple hours a day, putting a few hairs in here and talking to people and putting a few hairs in there. So that was probably about a year. When it came to the horses, now the first one took me a lot longer because of all the research. And so I think he took 8 months. And then the second one was like 5 months, something like that. It went a lot faster. But it's all painstakingly, you know, hand-sculpted everything. And yeah, there some of those projects are long-term. And then like in when I did all the mammals for the rainforest, I think I did 43 animals in a year and a half. So it just depended on the time frame, too, and if we had a time restraint, and then how many specimens I had to do.
So I guess can you walk me through the process of research is already a big part. Sculpting it is a huge part.
Yes.
But then you said hairs one by one.
Oh, okay. Well, in the case of Samson, he is 100% artificial. The Samson on display at the museum is called a recreation. And the reason he is a recreation is his skin was not mountable. So he died in 1981. There was a taxidermist that was hired to mount him for the zoo. So that gentleman came out and he skinned Samson and he made a death mask of Samson. And then Samson's skin sat in his freezer for 3 or 4 years. And then eventually the zoo relinquished him to the museum. So I went to flesh it and prepare it for tanning and all the process that's required. And his skin was what we call slipping, which means the outer layer of epidermis was peeling off in large pieces with the hair. So that made him unmountable. So I saved his skin because it was very valuable scientifically because he was a wild captured gorilla. So his DNA and everything could be, you know, used for research. And then when it came to making the recreation, we had a president at the time of the museum that I had proposed the idea of making this recreation. He said, I like it and I want you to do it in front of the public. So we started out the first messy stages of the process were up in my studio with a webcam on me. So you could log in from home and watch me actually making him in my studio. Then we took him downstairs and put him on display, or me making him on display, and built a whole exhibit about gorillas all around it. It was very, very popular and really a cool exhibit. So we had his skeleton, okay. And Samson was one of the largest gorillas ever in captivity. So there is a company by the name of Bone Clones that makes artificial casts of things. So they had an extra large male gorilla that I purchased, the skeleton. It's made of plastic. And then looking at his real bones, I lengthened each one of the bones to make it Samson-sized. So from that bone structure, I then bulked up all the muscles and all the body anatomy using two-part foam that you mix together, it expands and it hardens quite hard. And then I carve it. Now that's his body. When it came to his face, I took that death mask that the other taxidermist had made and I completely retooled it. Because when you have a death mask, a cast of a dead animal, that's exactly what it is, a dead animal. So you don't have any muscle tone, you don't have blood pressure, you don't have expression. Mm. So I had to put all of that life back into it. It was very critical that I make those eyes. If those people that knew Samson, he always looked at you out of the corner of his eyes in disgust. It's just kind of funny. He had an attitude, and people loved his attitude. So I had to capture that. So then I worked on getting the eye set right. So when it came to making his hair in that, I implanted the hairs one hair at a time from the back of his nape of his neck all the way down to his chest. Because Samson's skin was saved, I sent 6 different parts of his hair, of his body, to a company that makes the hair for Hollywood, for the movie industry.
Whoa.
Yeah, and they matched it. They made it. They did the best job they could using, this took us back and forth like 5 months to get the right blends. And so the hair is made out of acrylic, yak hair, and goat hair. And then the hands and feet and the chest, I took casts of actual like gorilla skin, and I made stamps kind of. And I stamped all the skin texture into the hands and the chest and everything. So it's a long story, but basically that's how I made them.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
How do you decide how you'll pose an animal or the story you want to convey?
If it were for a client, what the client would like, that's first and foremost. And I oftentimes, you know, make suggestions. But sometimes people will say, just take it and do whatever you want with it. You know, I trust you. Sometimes it's something that you want to show us something specific off. And here's an example. This isn't my freelance work, but in the museum in the rainforest, we have a jaguar that I've mounted. And the jaguar is kind of on a crouching pose. And the reason it's in a crouching pose relates to a story you just did about the zoo animals and what they do with them. And that particular jaguar was one that died at the zoo, and it had had a necropsy done on it. So its entire belly was shaved. So in order to mount it, I needed to put it in a pose that hid that belly.
Wow.
So, I mean, things like that will dictate the pose.
And when I'm thinking of Samson, how you were saying, like, the expressive face,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you were looking at a lot of photos of him.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning that. So when I was doing Samson on display, I was so fortunate to have Sam LaMalfa with me. Sam LaMalfa was the zookeeper at the zoo in Samson's last 10 years of his life. And Sam retired from the zoo, and he became a docent at the museum. So Sam had all these fantastic photographs, and he was sitting on the table next to me. I'm making Samson, and Sam is telling stories because people wanted to know, you know, they wanted to swap their Samson stories. So Sam was right there and able to interact with the public, but he was very helpful to me. I could bounce questions off of him. Does this look right? Does this look? Did Samson do this? Did he? And so that was really helpful.
You had someone that worked directly
yeah.
with Samson. That's
yeah.
amazing. Well, Wendy, thank you so much for speaking with me today and telling me more about your amazing and extensive career in being
thank
a taxidermist.
You're welcome.
Wendy Christensen is a wildlife artist and world champion taxidermist. She spoke with Lake Effect's Excret Nunez last spring. Did you know you can listen to Lake Effect as a podcast? Just search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen to us on demand. In about 15 minutes, we'll hear from 2 senior dance groups about how dancing does more than just keep them healthy. But first, we'll head to Milwaukee's East Side to learn how a nearly 100-year-old pipe organ was restored and installed at the Oriental Theater. Keep listening to Lake Effect on WUWM. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Since Milwaukee Film took over operations of the Oriental Theater in 2018, they've been working to restore the movie palace to its original grandeur. Except there was one key part missing, a theater organ. That is, until now.
I'm WUWM's Lena Tran.
And I'm Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. When the Oriental Theater reopened its doors in 2018, it was nearly just as it was a century ago, when ornate movie palaces were all the rage in major cities.
They were designed to transport people into other worlds. A big part of how they achieved that world building was with theater pipe organs, those huge, complex instruments known as the voice of silent films.
But the Oriental's organ wasn't there anymore. Since it opened in 1928, the Oriental has actually had 2 organs. The last one was removed and handed over to a new owner before Milwaukee Film took over the theater's operations in 2018.
Kristen Heller is the COO of Milwaukee Film. She says they always thought it'd be great to bring an organ back to the Oriental.
It was always our dream because it felt like there was a missing piece. It felt like there was something that was part of the original building that wasn't here, that we wanted to eventually find an organ for this place.
Heller says bringing an organ back to the Oriental Theater is all about tapping into that century-old cinema magic.
Once upon a time, there were no audio tracks with film, like a piano or an organ was really the only way that there was any kind of music that like you could convey emotion with sound. And so for us, it sort of allows us to sort of bring back the original magic of this place.
This dream was 5 years in the making, and it began with the search for an organ, which is how Milwaukee Film found Jeff Weiler. He's a renowned expert in pipe organ restoration and maintenance, and runs a business out of Chicago, curating and restoring organs around the world.
According to Weiler, the organ at the Oriental Theater is one of only about a dozen out of thousands of Wurlitzer pipe organs made in the early to mid-20th century that's still in its unaltered, factory original state.
We acquired this instrument about 18 years ago, and we felt that some good and noble purpose would present eventually.
The organ that now calls the Oriental Theater home was originally saved from the Paramount Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. It was installed in 1925 and was rescued in 1960 before the building was going to be demolished.
From there, it was taken to North Dallas, Texas, where an attorney decided to build a large music room and have the organ. His pipe dream was never realized, and then it was acquired by J.L. Weiler Incorporated.
When Milwaukee Film came knocking, the theater needed an organ, and the organ needed a theater. Weiler says it was a perfect marriage.
But then came the hard part. The installation process took them well over a year. It took about 13,000 man-hours to restore the 10-ton organ and multiple truckloads delivered from Chicago.
Now, when you walk into the main theater, all you see is the organ console. That's the keyboard and all the buttons and pedals that an organist has contact with. But most of the instrument is hidden from the audience, and it's embedded into the theater itself.
The biggest part of the instrument is unseen and is contained in two large organ chambers flanking the proscenium. And, of course, there's a big turbine blower down in the basement. So the impact of the organ on the building is pretty significant when you think you have all of these interconnected systems running all around the stage end of the building.
That 10-horsepower turbine in the basement keeps air flowing through the pipes, which is how it makes sound. So, Lena, do you remember that dark hallway we were kind of creeping around in underneath the stage?
It was kind of scary.
Yeah, so that's what it was, the turbine going.
Oh, okay. I did not expect a big hole.
Is that scary? Oh my God. It's like Indiana Jones.
The installation process doesn't simply stop when all the instrument's components are connected in the building. Weiler explains how they make sure each organ is fitted to its unique environment.
When we wake the instrument up the first time, there is a commissioning protocol that we have to go through because every function has to be tested, adjustments have to be made, and just like any large piece of machinery, this is an instrument that requires regular routine maintenance. But the initial process is perhaps the most involved because we have to musically fit this instrument to the room's acoustics. And that means we have to make very discreet adjustments to all of the pipes in the organ so they sound their best.
This can get complicated because the pipe organ makes so many different kinds of sounds. It houses all these instruments, like a piano, of course, but also sleigh bells, drums, a glockenspiel, and other sound effects specifically for silent films. Think doorbells, horse hooves, birdsong.
Part of what makes all this possible is one important cable connecting about 2,000 wires. This cable runs from the main console to a large switchboard in the basement that's right under the stage. From there, it's connected to another cable just as big that goes from the main organ chamber to another switchboard, and that's responsible for sending out all the electrical signals to produce sound.
All of that uses about 60 miles of wire. Each wire goes to a specific place, and hundreds of on-site man-hours were spent on point-to-point wiring to make sure the electric signals do their job to make the organ's action seamless.
What makes this instrument unique on the national cultural stage is we have restored every bit of the original technology. So this instrument sounds and functions precisely as it did in 1925.
So after all this work and fine-tuning this massive instrument, I asked Jeff what it was like to see and hear the organ in its new home. Can you share with me how you felt the first time you heard this organ fully restored playing in this theater?
Oh, absolutely. I had tears in my eyes. Think of it. This instrument has not made music since before World War II. And for much of its life, it had been sitting in storage.
Now that the Wurlitzer was awake, it needed an audience. Milwaukee Film debuted the organ with a fundraiser and screening of the silent film Safety Last, which recently celebrated its 100th anniversary. The film is known for this iconic scene, where a man hangs dangerously off a clock tower over the busy streets of Los Angeles. Basically, it was the Mission Impossible of the 1920s.
Organist Ron Rode flew in from Phoenix to accompany the film and showcase the instrument. He's had a long career as an organist.
When my theater organ career started, I was 21 and moved to Phoenix and played in a pizza parlor.
He always knew he wanted to make the organ his life's work.
And I met up with Lynn Larson, who is an organist and was playing at the pizza parlor. He said, yeah, I think you can make it, through his tutelage. And then 2 years later, my own restaurant, we had two in the chain and then eventually three. I just went on to play for about 24 years total at the pizza parlor. And then I decided I needed a retirement because there isn't any as an organist. And so I became a school teacher and taught 20 years, got my 80 points, and now I can just play theater organ.
As an organist, Rode is known for being a traditionalist. He's happiest when he's playing music of the 20s, the heyday of organs and movie palaces.
And all the major theaters that were built, they had fabulous organs. And so it was a part of the mainstay, and the music was perfect for the organs as they were. I just think being a traditionalist means I should play what it's meant for. There are organists that play current pop music and all kinds of things like that that, in my ear, don't do the organ justice. If you hear my concerts, you'll hear up into the 40s, maybe some 50s. Once in a while, a song from the 60s or 70s, but it's mostly 20s and 30s.
The spotlight opens on Rode, and the entire organ rises into position. The screen flickers, and he tilts his head up, watching. Most of what he plays is actually improvised.
I've watched the film four times. I played it about 2 months ago in Phoenix, so I know the film pretty well. I will just sit down and whatever moves my body to play this theme or this, you know, something that's made up out of my brain.
Rode dances with the organ, feet tapping and hands flying up and down the keys. It's an all-body experience.
I get sore now, being older, because I sit in the same position with my head cocked to see the screen. And I rarely really take my eyes off of the movie the entire time. But it's sort of my script. So whatever's happening, that's what comes out the fingers and presses the keys.
The organ lulls and sings and swells and teases. It tells us how to feel about what's happening, and people are loving it. They laugh and gasp and lean forward in their seats.
We had a great time watching Safety Last and watching Rode play along with the film especially.
It was great. Kristen Heller from Milwaukee Film says they hope to show more silent films accompanied by the Wurlitzer or feature more performances before regular screenings. For now, the emphasis is on Milwaukee Film member screenings, but they're working on having more public opportunities to see and hear the organ soon.
And it just feels like we can really have fun and we can really get in there and create really special moments that people could not have had otherwise and just show whole new generations what this technology was like and how it can be transformative for sound and for your Smithsonian experience.
Jeff Weiler, the restorationist, says the organ is time travel. It takes us back to how people would have experienced this a century ago. It's this thing that's transcended time, going to the movies, losing ourselves in another world for a brief moment, enchanted by the music.
These instruments are distinctly American instruments. Their purpose, of course, was as the voice of silent film initially. And whereas you have a phenomenal facility. If you take one separate from the other, you lack perspective. They're just meant to be together.
For Lake Effect, I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Lena Tran.
A new season of Bubbler Talk is underway, and we need some new questions from you. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. We'll take one last break and then bring you one of our favorite stories from 2024, courtesy of some ladies who love to dance. Keep listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. A single session of physical activity can have immediate and long-term benefits for seniors. It helps improve brain health, heart health, and improves bone strength. There's lots of ways for seniors to be safely active, but one of the best ways to stay healthy, happy, and find a sense of community is through dance. And let's face it, dancing is just fun, no matter what your age. Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez met with two senior dance groups. One is at Oasis, a 50-plus center on the south side that offers year-round classes, including different workout groups. But we'll start at Clinton Rose Senior Center with the Roselettes, a dance group that's been stepping for over 30 years, staying healthy and supporting each other.
So I am outside of the dance room right now at Clinton Rose Senior Center, and the Roselettes are doing their thing. We're two dances in. We've gone through the morning prayer, gone through the warm-up dance. Now I'm just watching the women work. Oh, oh, we're singing now.
And I'm so glad that our original Roselette got in the house. Lucille Cole, who's been with the Roselette since 1991.
My name is Lucille Cole. And I came to the Clinton Rose Center. My husband had passed. So it started out at an exercise group where we were so, had so much energy till the president organized, Fannie Dunlop, she organized this group from the exercise group because we did exercise, you know, but not the old folks exercise. So I just enjoyed it. I've just been here. It was since 91.
My name is Brenda Porter.
My name is Arcola Edwards, and I'm currently the president of the Roselette Dancers.
I joined in 02. I've been retired 25 years, and I got both knees replaced and both hips.
And you're still going.
Still going.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Bryce, and I started with the Roselettes the last of August of 2023.
Can you introduce yourself and tell me how long you've been with the Roselettes?
My name is Lois Reddick, and I've been with the Roselettes since September of 2003. In fact, I celebrated 20 years of retirement last year and 20 years with the Roselettes.
What is the group given to you personally?
Stardom. I'm a star as a Roselette dancer. I laugh about that, you know, but I think people got to know me as a Roselette dancer. And for sure, coming in here has helped my health and mental state.
It keeps you agile, keeps you moving, keeps your bones moving. You don't get stiff. And I enjoy that. I don't want to get stiff where I can't get up. I have to be on a walker or can't move around like I want to. I like to be able to take care of myself for as long as I can. I don't want nobody to help me.
You know, instead of just standing in a house all day being depressed, you know, you come out, you dance. It's something called enjoyment, and I love it.
I had a heart condition. The doctor told me, he said, you can't dance. And I just broke down broke down in the doctor's office and cried. Now, I didn't tell my husband, but I told Lois, who was then the dance instructor, my situation. So what I did is I told her, I said, place me on the end, and I'm just going to do one dance. And that's how I handled that situation. So that problem has been corrected, and I've been dancing ever since.
Go ahead, Alcola. Woo! Talk to us.
That's right.
Let us know. We're looking good to them. Because when the audience talks to me, baby, I tell you, I can't get talks to them.
What do these girls or these women or these sister dancers mean to you, and how have they shown up for you over the years?
Well, you know, if you live long enough, you have sicknesses and you have deaths, and it's always nice to know people are thinking about you. This time, last year, my voice had messed up. I had a thyroid that was It was pressing up against my voice box, and I didn't even now know whether after surgery I was going to be able to talk. But through it all, I didn't give up, and they didn't give up on me. People helped with the directions, giving the directions of the dance. That's what comes from being with people two times a week, 3 hours a week, you know. You get to know each other. And it's some love starts to happen.
There's another dancer, and she and I both went through, I lost my husband, and she lost a family member. So we, both of us either lost two or three family members last year, and we've been a support to each other. Had my husband lived, we would have been married 50 years this past February. So that's a big change in my life. So just having people you could share things with, but not necessarily the entire dance group. All of us have one individual that we're closest to.
You know, we always try to make sure everybody get what they need. If you're sick, let us know. We get together and we bring stuff to you, whether it's food, fruit, car, just a conversation.
All right, we got a new dance in the house, y'all.
I'll be sure to show no one that.
Yeah, you gotta show that. I'm on oxygen, and I forgot my... You don't have a tube with you, do you?
I do not. No, I don't. I don't have an oxygen tube. Oh, I forgot my... What do you think the legacy is of the Roselettes?
You got some senior women that know how to have a good time. You know, they smiling through it all. When we're out in front of people performing, they don't know about our aches and pains. They don't know about even the disagreements that we have had in getting this routine together. They see the final product, and the final product, we got smiles on our faces, our bodies are moving, our hips are shaking, and we're just having a good time.
I hope the group goes on and on, because it's really something that gets you out of the house and keeps you busy, and it's like fellowship with all the girl ladies. We're like friends. We're not, you know, not just dance person. We get to know each other.
When we're out doing things in the community, they are saying to us, "Ooh, when I grow up, I want to be just like you," you know. And we clapping our hands and saying, "Yeah, well, we trying to set a good example." So that's the legacy that we want to leave, that when you become a senior, life is just beginning. We're living our best lives right now.
The Roselettes show no sign of slowing down, and even let me know before I left that they perform at birthday parties and get-togethers. They call themselves, unsurprisingly, the life of the party. On the south side of the city, there is another place for older adult dancing and community. Oasis is on 24th and Mitchell and is run by Milwaukee Rec. And like Clinton Rose, it is more than just a building, more than its programming, although there is a lot of programming. urban gardening, fine arts classes, a rec and workout room, ESL classes. I talked with Megan Fry, who kind of runs things around the center, and she told me that the first stop I should go and check out was their Zumba Gold class, Senior Zumba.
That's the way I like it.
Okay, this is choreographed. They've done this before.
In class today, there were close to a dozen seniors, some from the neighborhood, others from all over Milwaukee. And something they all said was that they would follow their instructor, Ava, wherever she goes. I feel like these are your children almost, like how much they adore you and love you and come to follow you, it sounds like. How long have you been doing this and why do you keep coming back?
Maybe more than 10 years. And especially I feel very comfortable in this place, my home. I feel this is my family. And then I start having, you know, diabetes. So this has helped me more than, they give me more than I can offer, you know.
I'm looking at seniors staying healthy. You know, as you age, it's so important to keep working out, to stay strong, to keep using your body. Can you talk a little bit about why it's so important for, as you age, to use your body and to stay in shape?
Sure. This age, we have losing cells. Since you are 24, you start losing your brain cells. So you have to make more, no? Like your body exercise. If you don't move it, you lose it. You know, we're trying to do tiny at the beginning and then, you know, a little bit more, a little bit more. And they are very proud because they are learning something. And the brain is working, the memory is working, and especially because you have dementia cases, or, you know, they lose their memory or they lose their, I don't know, mobility, they come to surgeries. So it's come a really, really hard time for us to keep on the day in the day. If they stay at home, they're going to be depressed. I invite everybody to try, you know, to find a family. Anywhere, any place, but this is the best. We invite everybody if we want to keep going.
Support each other through thick and thin. Buying houses, buying cars, who knows?
We celebrate birthdays.
And birthdays.
Today is his birthday.
And it's Ava's wedding anniversary today.
The group ranges in how long people have been coming. Some have been coming 10 to 15 years. Others just got started this year with the New Year's resolution, and they all had different reasons for coming.
I hope I would be inspirational, because I also share mine on my Facebook and other social media, because I literally came to lose my COVID-19 pounds that I gained during the pandemic. And so I literally just came to lose my 19 pounds. I've already lost 10 of them since January, and I'm certain the next 9 are on the way.
We're not the only ones that take just this class. There's other classes that we teach here. Ava teaches Spanish and drum. There's opportunities.
We go to strength classes and core classes. The people, the instructors, are what encourage us. They tell us to do what we can, when we can. We have to sit down. But it's helped me, because this is the time when I really need to do something about myself.
It feels more than an exercise group. It feels kind of like a family. Can you put your finger on and share a story of when this group supported you in a specific kind of way? And that's a question for everybody.
I don't know if I can. I lost both my brother. 2 weeks later, I lost my brother-in-law. 3 months later, I lost my sister-in-law, who was married to my brother. And then a year later, I lost my precious dog that I had for 16 years and 6 months, my Rosie. So it was the ability to come here and work through that grief and to have that support and to have that love was really important and kind of carried me through that. So I appreciated that very much.
I've gone through a lot. Broke my finger once, and they were all in support of that.
I just want to say that you broke your middle finger that you just... you just kind of flipped me off. It's okay. I broke this finger.
What is the middle finger? No, but I also went through some problems with my breathing and things like that, and I've been going through I had a cardiac catheterization not too long ago, but everyone was always asking me when I came back, and glad you're back, and how are you? And I'm still going through a couple things, but they're a great group.
Like Megan said earlier, through the places I've visited, I see my family in these rooms, the best versions of them, aging and staying healthy, aging and still thrusting their hips, aging with friends, and still living their best lives.
That was WUWM's Jimmy Gutierrez. He spoke with the Roselettes at the Clinton Rose Senior Center and members of Oasis Zumba Gold Class last year. And that wraps up today's show. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Joy Powers, Sam Woods, and X-Grit Nunez join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Rob Larry and Graham Thomas. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. Emily Files helps edit the show. Jason Reeve is our studio engineer. Michelle Maternowski is our digital manager. Valeria Navarro-Villegas is our digital editor. Trapper Shep wrote our theme music. Thank you so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.